All right, great to have you back as we get ready for baseball tonight. The Giants have handled Colorado this year. They've won 7 of the last 8, 13-4 against the Rockies, and the Giants and Dodgers against Arizona, 29-4. And the Dodgers get Arizona tonight down in Arizona, and if things go well, we will see Bumgarner against the Giants next week. How about that? All right, joining us is Howard Bryant, and a dear friend, and I think, as I said, as we concluded our last segment with Bruce Jenkins, if you look for the national perspective, he's a wonderful author, columnist as well, and he knows the game solid. And Howard, how are you? It's great to have you on.
Good, Marty. How's it going?
Oh, it's been an amazing
kind of an
week.
Understatement for San Francisco baseball this year. How's it going? It's going pretty damn well.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And, you know, I've watched the game for a long time, and to see a team hit home runs and their whole offense is built around home runs, to me, is just amazing. And they do it every single night. And they have the highest differential of home runs hit versus home runs given up by a mile. And that's how good they've been. But it's all with the home run. Can you do that through the playoffs?
It's very difficult to do it during the playoffs. And you do have that, you know, when that happens, it's one of the things that you're always worried about. You saw that with the Yankees a couple of years ago, where every run they scored came off of the home run, and then, you know, they couldn't put two singles together and got knocked out pretty fast by the Red Sox back in 2018. So, you know, it's something that was always an issue in the past. I'm not sure how much of an issue it's going to be today, because the way they teach the game, a lot of the teams are built the same way. It's a boom and bust game. So there aren't very many teams that aren't trying to hit that way. I think the thing that gives me a lot of hope when you watch the Giants, as long as they hold on. If they don't hold on, then you don't know what to make of any of it, because of, you know, who wants to play St. Louis and who wants your entire season to come down to, you know, to one 9-inning game. But the thing that gives me hope about them too is that they also, you know, they're doing a lot of things that they used to do, you know, during the big years as well, where they're pitching better, they're playing defense, they're getting performances. I mean, what you're getting out of Brandon Crawford this year is the kind of stuff that you need if you want to win in October, that somebody, you don't know who it's going to be, but somebody every night is going to give you something that maybe the other team wasn't preparing for.
Well, and plus, Howard Bryant with us, of course, at ESPN, NPR, and I want to talk about your new venture, which is Meadowlark as well. But, you know, what's interesting about this team for me is, you know, baseball has written off everyone who's over 30, 31, 32 years old. And the heart of this team, really, are players 34 years old, and they haven't faded. You know, here we played 154 already. They're 154 as a record. And they've sort of shown baseball, hey, don't give up on us just because we're over the age of 30.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about this is the story of the year. I know that there's all kinds of talk about everything else happening in the game, and there's talk about, you know, Vlad up in Toronto, and there's talk about Ohtani, and there's talk about, you know, the different teams out there, and that the, you know, whatever on earth is going on in the National League East. But the San Francisco Giants, and also obviously whatever went on with the Padres this year, but the Giants are the story of Major League Baseball this year. And in all kinds of ways, it's not just that you look at their age and you said, okay, can they compete? It was also the fact that you didn't look at them up and down no matter who they were, and you just didn't think that they were going to be as good as they were. But this is the type of, as they've been, this is one of the things about this team, though, that I really, really like, is that you've got players that, you know, that have things to prove, and then also you start getting to a point where you are you start looking and you go, okay, is this team built for 80 games? Are they a 120 game team? Are they 100? This team looks like it's a 162 game team. There's nothing that you're looking at right now where you go, okay, it can't continue, because it has. There's nothing that you look at now where you say, yeah, I don't know if you can sustain that next month, you know, which is very, very different than a lot of those other teams. The Yankees won their 13 games in a row. The Cardinals have got a 14-game win streak. I don't know what they did today, but they've got a 14-game win streak going. You know, the Red Sox started out really, really hot. The Blue Jays went through a period where they can't lose, and now you've got the Mariners looking like they can't lose. But the Giants haven't really been there. The Giants have just been good. They've been good all year.
Well, the Cardinals made it 15 today. They came back. They're down. Yeah, they're down 4-2 late in the game, and ended up winning 8-5 over the Cubs.
They've got that look. They've got that feel like the 07 Rockies, where they won like 17 out of their final 18 games, and ended up going to the World Series. And so, this is. Mm-hmm, go ahead, Marty.
No, please go ahead.
No, I'm saying, and this is one of the reasons why I'm such an opponent of this one game poison game. You know, you play 162 games. Everybody deserves a series. You deserve a series. I don't care if it's 2 out of 3 and you don't get a home game or whatever, because you don't want the number one seed sitting around waiting for a 5-game series with, travel. Okay, I get that. But you can't – the Cardinals have played well enough, even though they're probably not going to crack. They might crack 90, but the Giants and the Dodgers do not deserve to go out in one afternoon, neither one of them.
Neither one of them.
If the Giants come all this way and lose a tough game, come on. It's just not right. I mean, and especially if they end up – I mean, how do you like this? I mean, especially if they end up tied, and now you get – you're going to take this incredible season that the Giants have had, and it's going to, potentially end on a ghost runner on second base, because that's a regular season game if they end up tied.
That's right.
It's just brutal.
Well, the Cardinals 86 wins now. 86 and 69.
Yeah, they'll get to 90. Yeah.
They got 7 more. They'll probably get to 90. Now, you cover the A's during Art Howe years and, the good A's teams. And I always thought they were built for 162 and maybe not built for the playoffs. And I wonder about the Giants not having that ace, not having that one guy who can take you through October. Has the game changed that much where you can do Tampa Bay and do it way the Giants do it and go to the pen in the fifth inning the whole way?
Yeah, we sound old when we talk like this, Marty. We really do. And I think that the big fear that I've had when it's come to baseball for the last few years now is the absolute hit or miss nature that, in the old days, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you were making sure that you had a Gerrit Cole. Although in the A's case, they went out and got John Lester, and they couldn't get past the one gamer even with John Lester. But, you're looking at these teams, and what it really is going to come down to most of the time in the postseason now is not just one bullpen arm or two bullpen. It's all of them. It's who's going to have the, as we talked about this last year, baseball is being played today in a way that you're not counting on individuals to give you performances anymore. And that's what the postseason used to be all about. It was who's going to give you a performance. Who's going to give you, an Edgar Renteria weekend. Who's going to give you 2 weeks of that. Whereas today the sport is all about collecting outs. How do I get to 27 outs? Mm-hmm. And that leaves so much possibility for just volatility. You just have no idea what's really going to happen. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen this year, because I think this Giants story has just been such a fantastic story. And I don't think that the Dodgers have really played like defending champions per se, but in a way they have. They're going to win 100 games too. So I think it's going to be exciting, even though I don't really, really love the fact that you're not looking for a Bumgarner or a Kershaw or one guy to take you home. I think those days are over.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great playoff. I think any of the American League teams can win, and the Brewers have that, the starting pitching and a bullpen. And then, of course, we talked about the Giants and Atlanta. I'm not sure about, and I guess they'll hold the Phillies off.
They're not that good. And so, but that's the weird thing, is that you don't necessarily have to be that good right now, depending on how it shakes out, how's it going to play out, if it plays out in your favor or not. I've sort of felt like the last couple of years have really sort of exposed the need to play the game a little differently, right? Like, it's just in terms of when you're watching these postseason teams. I mean, how can you count on teams when you're looking at guys in the lineup and guys are hitting 200, 210, 220? I mean, you just don't know. I'm looking at watching the Red Sox and the Yankees right now. Joey Gallo's hitting 204. Three guys in the lineup hitting under 220. I mean, so it's just really difficult to tell what you're going to get. But the one thing I do like about the Giants, as I ramble here a little bit, Marty, is that I do you talk about these guys being over 30. It's not just over 30. They've got, you know, Chris Bryant's been in the World Series, right? He's World Series champion, right? Evan Longoria has been to the World Series. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got guys there who might not be, they're not going to be afraid. And that counts for a lot. And that's, you know, you go back to the 2010, the 2012 team, you know, even the 2014 team, you know, who was going to blink first? It wasn't going to be the Giants. And that goes a long way when the air gets thin.
Yeah, they got five of them. I just talked to Bruce Jenkins about that. And, that, you know, you could say what you want about Brian. He hasn't, you know, knocked the fences down here. But he's been there. And Longoria, if you look at Tampa Bay in, what, 09, he was the guy. And you still have
the guy.
And you got Belt going wild. He looks like Willie McCovey from 69.
And another champion. And Crawford, you know, champion.
And Posey.
Guys, and of course, you've got Buster, champion. So it's a dangerous emotional postseason mix for the opposition.
Yeah,
you know, they're not the guys you really, really want to play because they're not going to, you know, they may win, they may lose, but they're not going to be afraid. You're not going to look at them and go, I don't trust them right now.
You're right. No, you're 100% right. That's why it's going to be the exciting part. Hey, tell me about Meadowlark Media that you're involved with.
Well, Meadowlark is a startup. You know, John Skipper, who hired me at ESPN, he's a CEO of the company, and he started up with Dan Levitard, and those guys really wanted to try to create essentially a new media company. It's a production company as well, so we're trying to create projects and do documentaries and such on top of podcasts and on top of Dan's regular radio show. So my role in this has been doing a lot of development, thinking about documentary films, thinking about doing different types of pods, thinking about really trying to create. How many times do we talk about, oh, well, if I had the opportunity, I would do this. Or if I could put these people on the air, I would do that. And if, you know, and how many times are we watching other people's movies and say, well, I would have done it this way. Well, here's an opportunity for us to try to see what we're capable of doing and to see what sort of projects we can put out there. And it's been really exciting.
One thing I noticed when I was just looking at it, one of the topics, social media and the modern athlete, that one grabbed me.
Yeah. One of the big questions that people have been talking about, and I did a piece on this for ESPN not too long ago, I think it was last week, really all about, we were talking about the post 9/11 anniversaries and such, and I was thinking about what 20 years of this, of what this landscape, this 9/11 era has done to us. And I found that one of the things that's been really interesting has been, it's not 9/11 related, but it comes out of this 9/11 era, is you're looking at a very different athlete. You're looking at athletes today who are asking more of the public. They're asking more for, you know, a little more compassion, a little more understanding, a little more control. All of these things sort of roll into one. And when you go back and you think about 9/11, you know, people were asking the sports world to bring it all together. And now these days, even something as weird as the Mets sort of booing their own fans a few weeks ago, the message is, hey, you asked us to be there for you. Now we're kind of rewriting the rules. We want you to be there for us. Mm. And so the players are doing some things that we're not used to, that now they're saying that their mental health is an issue, that I'm not necessarily prepared to play, or I don't think that you should be booing us as fans. And they're sort of rewriting these rules. And the question to me has been, how much of this is going to shift? How much of it needs to shift? And what is this, you know, what is the post 9/11 athlete going to look like going forward? We're already seeing them also, you know, buying percentage, you know, points of teams. LeBron James has 2% of the Red Sox, right? You know, Alex Rodriguez has got a percentage in the Minnesota Timberwolves. Dwayne Wade now has a piece of the Utah Jazz. So we're looking at them. You know, the whole shut up and play era is over, and these guys are they're more than what we had expected them to be for so many decades.
Boy, Howard Bryant with us, the best. Howard, I love it. I love having you on. You're the best. You really are. It leads me to this: the CBA. I was thinking about it. And,
baseball CBA, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and you just led me right into it as you were talking. I was thinking about it. What's that going to look like? And I know playoff format's going to change, more teams, more money. But it also, what about the player and the control and the free agency and all that stuff?
Well, this is, you know, Tony Clark and I were having breakfast a couple of years ago before the shutdown. And I remember he kept saying that if you want to understand baseball right now, if you want to know what's going on between the players and the owners, that the real battle in the sport is, what do you want your sport to look like? What do you want it to represent? What do you want its values to be? Who are we as an industry? And a lot of this, that conversation was based on the framework of the Astros and what was going on back then. But it was also the influx of gambling. It's like the, you know, it's like the scene in The Godfather where they're all sitting around talking about how are we going to accommodate, you know, drugs in our game right now, right? And this is, we all have to get it. We have to get in on this heroin and everything else, right? Well, the heroin in Major League Baseball right now is gambling. For everything we're talking about, every time you turn on sports, whether it's tennis or baseball or football, it's all sponsored by DraftKings. It's in the sport right now. And so for years, the game had been trying to get away from this, and now you can't. Now you've got to decide how this fits. They're not going to leave $100, $200, $300 million of revenue on the table, so now this incorporates itself into the sport. And so there's that, and then there's the other piece of it as well, which is, okay, how then do we want to approach ourselves as an industry? The game has moved more and more toward, you know, being run like a Fortune 500 company. Each of the teams are doing the same thing in terms of having 15, 16, 20 people in their statistical analysis and all in their sort of sabermetric rooms. And so the values of the sport are really up in the air. And I think it's going to be real interesting to see what they fight for. The playoff expansion is going to be a big piece of leverage. I think that this one game thing is a disaster, but I also think seven teams in each league is also a disaster. You can't say that the regular season matters, where if you're going to have seven teams in each league make the playoffs, you're going to have some teams go 162 games, win 79 games, and make the playoffs. That's not right.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you on that. But I do see the playoffs being expanded into a
series.
They
need to be expanded. They need to go to five, or they need to keep everything as it is right now, but you got to give those two wild cards a series. You got to play two out of three. Right. I remember talking to Billy Beane about this, and Billy was like, well, you can't have playoffs and not have a home game. I'm like, well, why not? Why not? You know, whoever has the better record, they get the home game. They get a three-game series, and let that be. But you just can't, you know, the San Francisco Giants this year could go win 107 games and go out in nine innings. It's not right.
No, it could happen. Hey, you got a new book coming out on Ricky Henderson, and if you follow Howard on Twitter, there's been different little excerpts here and there. It sounds fabulous. It just sounds terrific. And tell me about the Ricky Henderson bio.
Well, Ricky's coming out in May of 2022. And I'm really looking forward to it. I think that, you know, after all that's been going on in terms of, you know, all the books that I've been doing, I was just in the mood to get away from some of the really, really dense social and racial topics. And I wanted to just go back to doing something that I found to be really fun. And Ricky represented that. And also just when you go talk to people about Ricky, as I tell people, if you think you're getting 400 pages of third person, you've come to the wrong place. However, you can't avoid that part of Ricky, and you shouldn't want to. He's an unbelievable American original. The thing that I found most fascinating about it just as a project is that Ricky went from, you know, if you go back to the day by days and you go back to the late 70s and the early 80s, he was not always a very popular player in the public. The fans always loved him, but there's a shift with him. He had gone from, you know, he really did represent that selfish, moneyed 80s player. And then there came a point in time where he became this combination between Satchel Paige and Yogi Berra with all the Ricky-isms and maybe I'll play forever. And Ricky never officially retired. So it's a real story about sort of an American original, the evolution of a baseball player, and how he, when it's all said and done, you look at those numbers, you can talk about the third person all you want, but this guy is a titan and maybe top five, seven players of all time.
No, I agree. And maybe a top four or five. I put him up higher.
You know what,
Marty,
can I say one quick thing?
Sure.
Just one quick thing. When you think about all-time records, right, usually by the time you break a record, you're at the end. You're at the end because that's what it takes to break a record. You know, it takes a career. That's why they're called career records, right? The all-time whatever. Ricky broke the all-time stolen base record when he was 32. He held that record as an active player for 12 years. And that never happens. The only other time I can see that happening was Babe Ruth was the all-time home run leader in 1921. So he held it for, I think, 14 years. But that was because of the change of the ball. I mean, that was a big piece of this. Ricky was the all-time stolen base leader in 1991, and he retired in 2003.
Well, to me, he dominated. He dominated the game. His whole career, he dominated the game for me, and that was the difference. Whether it was home runs, yeah, stolen bases, walk, you name it, runs scored, he dominated the game. And I think there's a reason why he maybe isn't held as high, and that's why the book will be terrific as you explain some of these
exactly.
things.
Exactly. There's lots of reasons. My little favorite story in there so far is just the fact that in 1989, the Bay Bridge series, the Giants were the ones who went after Ricky first. They had a deal for Ricky on the table. And the deal didn't go down because Ricky didn't want to go to the National League. And the Giants said, we already have a lead after. We've got Brett Butler. So they wanted Ricky to bat fifth. And then they end up meeting in the World Series, and Ricky tears him apart.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Good stuff. Boy, Howard, it's great to have you on. Before I leave you, what's the mood in Boston? Can the Red Sox hold on to this thing?
Well, the mood in Boston is sort of up and down. The Red Sox are up 2-0 on the Yankees in the sixth right now. And I think that they were terrible last year. It was not a great year, COVID, whatever you want to call it. They just weren't very good last year. J.D. Martinez had a terrible year, and then they started out like they were just the best team in baseball for a while, along with San Francisco. And then they sort of leveled off, and they've been an average team, and they've not been great post-trade deadline. And so I don't think the expectations are particularly high, but I also think that as they get closer, I mean, you're in a race right now. You're in a race with four teams. So it's Boston. They're paying attention. Everybody's watching. But I don't think that there's a great deal of expectation. It's more like let's see what happens instead. I think everyone knows they're kind of an average team.
Yeah, anything can happen. They got a good manager, I must say. Not having him last year hurt him, and he's back.
Yep. Yeah, but, you know, we'll see. I'm actually interested in seeing if the Seattle Mariners can come do something. It's fascinating to me that they haven't made the playoffs since they won 116 games and never got back.
And we were there, and we saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Hey, I love having you on. I'm so glad to catch up with you. And the Ricky book's going to be fabulous, and Meadowlark Media is going to be great. And keep up the good work. Keep up the good work.
No, it's my pleasure, Marty. Call anytime.
All right. Thanks, Howard. Thank you so much.
You guys. I'll see you guys later.
Absolutely. All right. That is Howard Bryan. More coming up. Kerry's going to join Bill and I, and we're going to talk some baseball with you. Boy, that was fun. All right, more coming up. KNBR 680, 104.5, the Sports Leader.